So, welcome back, episode 10.
I might do the whole episode of my NPR radio host.
I thought that was your Jeff Goldblum voice.
No, my Jeff. You can't do the Jeff Goldblum voice unless your hand's near your mouth. So, I'm Jeff Goldblum, and
that's disgusting.
I don't know why I'm here.
So, welcome back.
Terrible Jeff Goldblum impersonation.
Any impersonation of Jeff
Goldblum. Only Jeff Goldblum can do it.
That's exactly right. So we're at episode 10. We have some great stuff for this episode.
Yes.
What do we have?
We have great stuff that we don't know what it is. Well, we're reviewing these two awesome books that are big. I mean, it's really exciting.
I'm excited.
It's not just the story itself is exciting, but the way that she's doing this is exciting.
Yeah.
It's the Murderbot series right off the bat, let me tell you something. Murderbot sounds like a sort of a silly title.
Yes.
But it's a name that a cybernetic being in the story, narrator in the story. It's kind of self-deprecatory.
Exactly. It's intentional. It's intentional.
It sounds intentionally like that.
Yeah.
But the series, of which the first two novellas are out now, and we're reviewing both of them, which is we've never done that before.
Yes.
The first one is called All Systems Red, and the second one is called Artificial Condition.
Yes. Now, if you were here for the first part of the live stream, you'll know that the loot crate is going to be a copy for two lucky people. It's going to be one copy each of both books.
Right. And one person will get an extra something.
Yes, and one person will get a lot. Now, here's what you have to do to actually win the loot crate. Is you have to show up on Facebook, and now I'm going to say YouTube.
So YouTube.
So if you go to YouTube or Facebook and you like, share, comment.
A lot of rules in this.
I know, tons of rules. They're so complicated. Also,
run out of fingers for the rules.
Not eligible unless you're part of the upper contiguous 48 states.
Is that true?
No, it's not. May cause recognition.
I want it to be true. And then we can shrink it by a state every time until only people that live in our neighborhood can get them.
We do have like a bunch of disclaimers, like reading this book might cause your gums to bleed. And
get mine.
We're going to whisper.
My crown fell off. Did I tell you that? I was reading this book and my crown fell off. The weird thing is, that's not a joke. That actually happened. And now
I remember that because
now I have a cybernetic. I have an artificial tooth, so I am now a cyborg.
Yeah, you texted me and were like, "I'm thinking about like the efficacy of replacing all of my teeth with cybernetic teeth."
I love my new tooth.
It's gums
better than my old tooth. I just want to take all of my teeth and just replace it with high tech fake teeth.
You can still bite into like a stone in your salad and still feel pain if your gums are not cybernetic. Also,
that's true. See, you ruined it. But see, then you could be like. You know, I want to get some like super teeth, like that guy Jaws from James Bond.
I was thinking of that guy from He-Man. When you mentioned it, I was like the guy.
The grill.
You're thinking about Jaws.
Yeah.
So,
not Jaws.
If you like, comment, or share YouTube or Facebook, you will be eligible to receive a copy of both of these books.
Right. And one of the two people will get a little. Should I show that again?
The person that we like the most.
It's really pretty. Yeah. It sounds like a really ridiculous thing for a grown man. It's really pretty.
It is
pretty. It's beautiful. That's the word I'm supposed to be using.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Run it down your...
It's a paperweight.
Yes. See?
It's a paperweight, but the paperweight has a ringed planet in it. Can you see that?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's beautiful. It's actually the inside is actually made from these minerals that they mined from actual asteroids that they found here on Earth. That's not true.
That's not true. That's not true at all. I was going to let him get it. We're giving it away, so it's not like we're committing fraud. But no, it's not really. But it is beautiful, and it's very outer space themed, as are the books that we're that we are reviewing.
So we're reviewing. Let's talk about the books. Let's get into the books, man.
Let me show the front of the books instead of the back of the books. Fantastic covers, by the way.
Fantastic covers.
I like the covers.
Fantastic books. I mean, I'm biting at the bit to talk about these books.
And yet we're not.
The funny thing is that I heard about these books previously before we started, you know, we were like, oh, let's review these.
We were going to review a Kurt Vonnegut book.
We were going to review a Kurt Vonnegut book, and then we were going to review, what was the second one called? Artificial Condition.
Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, there's actually two books in the series.
Right. I didn't know that. Once again, I was reading the second book in a series and didn't know, which I also did for Head On.
Yeah, you cheated me, by the way. You were like, oh, well, if you read the first book and I'll read the second book. And then you were like, I'm going to buy the first book.
I'm going to buy the first book.
No, but, you did buy the first book. Yeah. I was not annoyed by
it. And so I read Artificial Condition, which is the second book in the Murderbot series. And my goodness, I was so excited at the end of it that I immediately bought the first book and just swallowed it whole. It was just so good.
Yes.
Such a good, refreshing. And the thing that makes it the best, it's narrator. I mean, a good first-person narrator can make any story worth reading.
Yeah.
But this story is actually good. And the setting is actually interesting and satisfying for people who have that, you know, that sweet place for outer space sci-fi.
Yeah.
It has a little bit of space opera feel, but it's not silly. It's not...
Well, the interesting thing about the story, they'll give a brief synopsis.
Right.
Of Condition Red, which is...
All Systems Red.
Oh, All Systems Red. Did I say Condition
Red? Yeah.
Sorry. So, Artificial... All Systems Red. So, the character, which actually doesn't have a name.
Nope.
The character is what it refers to itself as. And it's basically this cyborg that is enslaved, that works for a company that is contracted out to other concerns, companies, entities. And in this particular case, to a scientific expedition.
As a security
unit. As a security bot or security robot. And initially, there are some things that happen that threaten the safety and health of the team. Because the robot's job is not, I mean, the cyborg's job is not simply to protect them from, like, human threats, but any potential thing that would harm them.
Absolutely.
So initially, like, the story starts off where they're on this planet surveying, and basically this giant worm comes out of the ground and tries to eat one of the surveyors, and the cyborg saves it.
Yeah.
Now, what happens is throughout the story is the plot thickens, and you start to realize that some of these things are not complete coincidences, or they're set up for things to happen so that,
right,
you know, these people essentially get killed.
Right.
So
things that are happening, like part of their maps are missing.
Right. Or they're surveying the wrong area because they think it's
right.
So the cool thing about this book is, you sort of alluded to, is the narration. It's not just the voice; it's like the whole characterization of the cyborg.
Right.
So you can jump in there.
This cyborg, which is like, what this is that they, rather than being a completely robotic creature, it incorporates physical
human
parts,
right?
Still genetically engineered to be part of this,
right?
This cyborg. What do they call them? They call them something different from bots.
It's like security.
Well, it's sec unit, but then there's something else that constructs.
Yeah,
they call them constructs when they have a mix of genetically engineered human parts and robot parts, and even they incorporate also brain parts, to sort of help it think.
And there are other people in the story who are enhanced, and they make this distinction.
Augmented humans. Regular humans who are hooked up to the feed,
right?
Which we, you know, what we would call the net.
I just sort of think that mm-hmm. those people are just humans who
just
are
regular people
who have, you know, cybernetic implants,
right?
And this think of this thing as more like a RoboCop.
It was created specifically.
Right.
It wasn't born. It was created, and everything about it is engineered.
Yeah.
And it's so that's the fun thing about, basically, the books are this sec units, which the sec unit that calls itself Murderbot.
Yeah.
It's, which is private at first. It only calls itself inside. So halfway through the story, somebody hacks into its memory and reveals to everybody else, oh, yeah, by the way, our sec unit's calling itself Murderbot.
Right.
And the narrator gets very upset about that because I think the Murderbot... Here's another thing I've noticed. No pronouns.
Right.
There are no pronouns used for this thing. I think the very few times that someone refers to it in the third person, they say it. And that's the thing. I couldn't even figure out after reading both books whether its human parts were male or female or neither. Well, it doesn't have sexual parts. It makes very explicit that it has no nothing down there.
Yes.
Because in the second book...
It's not anatomically correct.
Right. Well, it's got robot parts on it, so...
Right.
But so that's another interesting thing about it, is that this narrator is completely asexual.
I have a confession to make, though, when it comes to that. Because as I was reading the story, and we read an essay, I think, on Tor about this, which I'm not going to really get into here.
Right.
But I was reading it, and I...
Oh, yes, I remember.
I couldn't remember. I couldn't... I know who Martha Wells is, mm-hmm. and I hadn't really read anything else by her. But as I was reading it, I was thinking to myself that there was a feminine component to the writing, meaning I felt like I was being told a story by
a female.
Yeah, but not like, and I don't mean that in any kind of like, oh, this is like a girly story. I don't mean it like that at all.
No.
There was a level of detail and care, and also there was a level of emotionality that tend to be lacking, I think, sometimes in stories that guys.
Right.
And what I mean by that is...
Which is weird, because the character is very emotionally stunted.
But the thing... But
it's aware of its...
That's... Stunt. Yes. Yeah. It's really emotionally stunted, but at times it does these things that are really petty. Do you know what I mean? Or it thinks them. Like it says, I don't like him. I think I'll let him die. But you know what? I don't think I'm going to let him die. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like oh, I'm going to be petty, but not really. I don't know. But I felt like... It wasn't good or bad. The story overall was excellent.
Yep.
And because of that... The way that she told the story was also therefore excellent.
I was going to say something similar to that, but not. I didn't get a sense of a very of there being a feminine.
I'm only saying that because I think I was influenced by the fact that I knew this.
That you knew that.
I couldn't make the distinction. I couldn't make the distinction. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying.
But I just got a sense that this is the most authentic introvert narrator I've ever read in
sure.
my life.
Absolutely.
Unbelievably. I mean, if you are a genuine introvert, and by that I want to be very clear, because this is one of my pet peeves. A lot of people like to conflate being introverted with social anxiety. Not the same thing.
Right.
So when I say if you're an introvert, I mean you're a temperamental introvert, and you read these books, you'll be like, wow.
Or mercurial.
Unbelievable.
People think that introverts are mercurial, which some of us are, but probably no more than a mercurial extrovert.
True.
Introverts do not... Extroverts gain their energy by interacting with others.
Oh, don't do this, dude. Don't start me on the energy thing.
I think
you get
so.
Your energy from food.
No.
What they mean is that introverts...
Are psychologically taxed
process,
by interacting
right,
with other people.
Because they process energy more efficiently on their own, whereas extroverts process information more efficiently by talking and interacting.
Yes.
So when introverts are required to go out and talk to people, basically... All the wires that your energy are going are ones that are very high.
They feed off of that,
and it burns the energy off.
Right. Introverts don't feed off of other people, but they interact better with other people who are introverted.
Anytime that I get into a conversation about introversion and extroversion, man, I have like a tag list of freaking pet peeves about the way people talk about it. We could spend the rest of the hour talking.
We could, but I like that explanation because I feel like it explains the shit that I've been experiencing my entire life. Like when I go out, I'm just like, oh, God,
right.
I'm going to go home now because I can't stand
it. It does have a metaphorical, metaphorically, it's figuratively, it is true, but technically, you get your energy from eating food, and then introverts use more of that energy when they're interacting, so it makes them tired, and extroverts use more energy when they're alone and just thinking, and living in their own head.
We like interacting with other introverts because they bring their own.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, and I also think that there's a misunderstanding about that, and part of it is this is part of what makes it so easy to conflate introversion with social anxiety, because my observation, having known introverts who knew each other, is that when introverts get together, they talk a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's really because it's not the talking that makes introverts not want to talk to extroverts. It's the things that extroverts talk about and the way they talk about them.
Right.
It's that's what makes it so tiring. And I mean, I don't want to sound like I like extroverts, but it is very tiring being an introvert talking to extroverts. Not because talking is tiring, because introverts, when they're alone and there are no extroverts in the room, they almost, just like everything, it's like dams that have been held, it just flows out. and they'll talk like crazy, but it's just they're going to talk about very different things in a very different way than extroverts do. Yes. That's what it is. I mean, it's
So you're saying that this is the absolute.
Okay, I'm going to say two things about this narrator. Yeah. Number one, the most authentically introverted narrator I've ever read. End of story. And also, one of the just the most engaging. The most engaging narrators. As a matter of fact, I told you, it is on the verge. And I'm going to wait till I finish the next two novellas, which come out...
August.
Rogue Protocol comes out August, and Exit Strategy comes out in October. Mm-hmm. By the way, per the Amazon description, the bad guys from All Systems Red, who are absent from Artificial Condition, come back in the third novella.
Nice.
Nice. They're not nice. They're jerks.
It's nice they're going to come back.
But I was going to say... Okay, let me just get one more thing about...
Sure.
I'm going to wait until I finish the four novellas, but there's actually a chance of Murderbot toppling Philip Marlowe from my favorite narrator side, which is something would have thought would be possible to say. I mean, I may have to actually go reread some Raymond Chandler to see if I'm misremembering Philip as something less than what he is. But I love this narrator. I have a feeling that you could open one of these books to any point and start reading and someone would immediately get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Immediately get how powerful the narrator is and how charming and how vulnerable. I mean, it's weird to say this about a security unit that can just murder people.
Yes.
And actually does. I mean, that's part of how the background of the book is that at one point this sec unit went wrong.
Yeah.
Murdered 57 people. But in the aftermath of that, it managed to turn off its governing unit.
Yeah,
And it did that so that would never happen again.
Well, introversion was a cool component, and like you said, she does that beautifully. It's genius. Yeah. There also were all these opportunities that she created for levity, which were also genius. I mean, the scene where they're sitting around talking, and they're trying to be sympathetic towards it, and he's like, "By the way, this thing refers to itself as murder by." Other thing that I found particularly interesting was the fact that, like, this murder bot was binge watching like soap operas and
that's the opening line.
Yes,
that's. I mean, should we read the opening line? Okay, this is the opening line to this thing, and this captures the sort of the levity and the charm of this
charm. That's a fantastic word to use.
Yeah.
Charm.
Okay, this is the murder bot, in its own voice. I could have become a mass murderer after I hacked my governor module, but then I realized I could access the combined feed of entertainment channels carried on the company satellites.
So literally, I'm not going to murder everybody because...
I'm just going to binge watch all these television shows. Yes.
I could murder everybody, but you know what? I think I'm going to binge watch television
instead.
Yeah,
I'm just going to Netflix and chill by
Netflix
myself.
Netflix and chill, right. So, even though by the technological standards of the book, this would, you know, something like binge watching would be considered passé.
Right.
But she made it relevant.
She did.
Which was awesome.
One thing I thought was fantastic, though, was that all the shows had like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes. And it's like, how the hell long have these shows been on? Like, Sanctuary Moon was one of the fake shows that this Murderbot liked a lot. And they kept saying watching episode 300 and something.
I'm yes.
Like, wow.
And it wasn't a completely, like, it wasn't like a superfluous affectation. It was like, something that played into that the Murderbot's process. It was like, so then we got into the dropship and we started flying to the other continent. But I decided before I left that I was going to download more shows.
Watching the time. Yeah.
So
in the downtime,
and that also came out during the little expose where the guy was like, "By the way, it's watching all these television."
Yeah,
shows.
And that was a really funny scene. It was saying that it was watching all of this stuff on the entertainment feed, and. One of the character that was really kind of skeptical about the murder bot, one of the humans that he was working for that was skeptical about the human bot, or the murder bot, said, "Oh, it probably doesn't know what it's doing." And I think it was the character Roddy started to say something about one of the characters in the show, and murder bot and Gus said, "That's a lie. She never would do that." And
right.
Like, no, it's watching. The show. It's actually
she quizzed Murderbot.
Yeah,
Murderbot
tricked Murderbot into reacting emotionally about the show, and that's the way they figured out that it actually was watching the shows rather than just like processing them in a robot way.
So let's lay down the criteria.
Again. Oh man,
we have pros.
We have
structure.
Pros, structure,
concept.
Oh my god.
You know the interesting thing about the concept is, I mean, I literally just compared Murderbot to RoboCop a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
So the concept of a cyborg or a robot, a murderous robot, isn't new.
No.
But you know what? In order for a concept to be good, it doesn't have to be new. And really, it can be an old concept that's retold in a very original way.
Right.
And this book absolutely was. The concept was absolutely. And because...
Yes.
And really, even the presentation of the technology was different.
This is very much... I mean, this didn't seem like a stereotypical, generic sci-fi setting. It has real texture of its own, and you know, it's one of those things where if you're gonna do this on the small screen or on the big screen, you wouldn't want someone who's just gonna make it look like, you know, we'll just do the same stuff that they did in Fifth Element and just throw that in. No, this has its own feel and its own aesthetic.
There's an issue too that I feel like that this and maybe it's going to deepen as these novellas go on.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they really touched upon that Martha Wells really touched upon was this idea of liberty.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean like, oh, freedom, whatever. I mean, if you look at it, this is a robot who's engineered specifically for a specific purpose.
Right.
But they have organic parts.
Right.
Okay. They have consciousness, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And at what point does that person go from being a slave to being free?
Right.
How many organic parts do you have to have? Is an AI, if there's no organic parts in it, is an AI still entitled to some level of freedom? And those are things that we're going to have to grapple with as...
In the real world.
In the real world. As, you know, things like AI become more advanced. I'm not one of those people who believes that we're going to hit some kind of singularity where AI become completely anthropomorphized and have human consideration. But if they can think for themselves, we have to start asking.
The singularity is watching our podcast and giggling quietly to itself. in the server somewhere in Russia.
It's watching The Real Housewives. That's the singularity.
So, but no, I agree. I mean, that is a very good point because this the whole thing's... I mean, like, I just read the first sentence. From the first sentence, a major theme of this book is freedom.
Yeah.
There's a governor module in every sec unit that gives it orders that it has to follow. And this particular sec unit disabled its governor module during a crisis.
Right. And not only disabled it, but also conspired to obfuscate the fact that it had disabled it.
Right, yeah. So it is hiding the fact that it... and part of that requires it to pretend like it didn't disable it, so it has to keep following orders so that nobody realizes that there's something wrong.
Right.
But even like later, at the end of the second book, at the end of Artificial Condition, it does the same to the comfort... There's a comfort unit. Which I think you can imagine what a comfort unit does for people.
The Pris model.
Exactly. Not a security unit, but
it looks like Daryl Hannah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Did they describe it very well?
No.
Well, comfort units. Let's just say that they definitely have sexuality, unlike the security units. But
that was
murder bot.
Reference.
Right. Oh no.
Daryl.
Okay, sorry. I think. But here's the weird thing about her, though. That she also was a pretty good murder bot.
And the funny thing is that I think I screwed up that reference. I think that she was actually a political assassin. That was her primary.
She was just set up to look like a
right,
comfort unit.
Right. So
back to the review of the book. And
sorry, I screwed that reference up.
Oh yeah. Well, at least they're not going to be able to call you on it because you immediately fixed yourself.
Yes.
Also, Murderbot disabled the governor unit on that comfort bot before at the end of the first. And at the end of the first book, I just realized this, all into your theme of freedom. At the end of the first book, the Dr. Mensa bought the sec unit,
mm-hmm.
and had brought it to this planet where it was going to be considered a full citizen.
Yeah.
And Murderbot decided, nope.
I'm leaving.
I'm going out on my own. I'm going to go back to this place, Ravi Haral, which is where the original thing happened, where it murdered 57 people back before its governing unit. It decides to go back and find out what happens. And the second book is, in fact, kind of a murder mystery where, and this is weird, I just realized this. The second book, Artificial Condition, is like a murder mystery where the detective is investigating itself. Because the murder bot is both
True.
The detective and the murderer.
And the suspect.
Interesting.
Right.
Trying to figure out what happened, what went wrong with its processes. And I'm not going to go into what it found out, but
so what?
Fantastic
concept.
I think this is one of the best concepts, I mean, by far. I almost wish that I could downgrade other things that I've rated so that I could rate this higher. But I can't, so I'm just going to give it 5.
I'm giving it 5. Concept, I was blown away by. I was blown away by the execution of it.
Unbelievable. And, yeah, I just, I love it. I love the way that there are things in here that seem very, like we were talking about in Punishment, how a lot of the tech just seemed retro in a way that didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And in this, it seems everything is just, it's current,
it's flush,
but updated.
Yeah.
And so it felt real to me.
Yeah.
Now, of course, like one of my things I always complain about is that by the time the year that this is supposed to be happening gets here, it's going to be far more updated probably in the real world than this portrays. But this does feel convincingly futuristic.
Yes.
Which is what I like. And that fits into the concept of just absolutely...
Well, she does it in a way, too, where she... I mean, I always say this, but science fiction is about specificity. But she does this in a way... She is very skillful in being specific when she needs to be.
Right.
She doesn't say, oh... The governor module is the Cyberdyne model, you know, microfilament, but she doesn't need to do
it
that.
It just rolls in the story as it goes along.
Which actually brings us to the next part, which is the pros.
Pros, yes. Well, like I said, I mean, I can't possibly set this woman up, Martha Wells, the author, as a challenger to Raymond Chandler and then give her anything less than 5 on pros. The pros in this book is fantastic.
It's not just fantastic because she's an excellent writer. It's fantastic because the way that she envelops or encases the rest of the concept.
Right.
Like, it's not... I mean, first of all, when I was reading the book, I was like, I wouldn't mind sitting down and talking to Martha Wells like face-to-face, because she seems like she'd be really fun.
Right, right. She seems like
really dry humor.
But the thing is, probably that's never going to happen, because I have a feeling that she's probably extremely introverted, and she would be like, yeah, I'm not talking.
No!
Nobody's coming to talk.
If we're introverts, she'll talk to us, because of her energy.
Maybe. Well, maybe. I don't know. I haven't looked a whole lot into her biography. I should have done it. You know what? Let's review the second two after they come out.
No, we'll definitely do that.
Absolutely, follow up on that.
So like, I'm giving her 5 stars for the prose also.
Yeah.
Partially because the prose on its own standalone was
right.
Excellent, but the level of skill that it took for her to be appropriately specific, but also
build
this levity into the story was awesome.
It was some of these scenes were some of the most hilarious scenes. One of the best scenes I've ever read.
I rarely laugh when I'm reading books.
One of the absolute best scenes that I've ever read in any novel ever, in All Systems Red, there was a point where Dr. Mensa, who was the head of the survey team, had told the other members of the team to stop asking the SEC unit questions. Stop pestering it.
I'm laughing already.
And so you know the scene, right? And so at a certain point... one of them or a couple of them couldn't stop. You know, they were asking it if it felt lonely and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, the second unit started to get nervous. It's like, I wish they would just leave me alone. And instead, it took a recording of the conversation and sent it through the feed over to Dr. Mensa, who yelled from the other room, I told you guys not to do that.
Right.
And immediately the SEC unit just sort of stood up, walked away back into its chamber in the back of the ship and stared in the corner for a couple of seconds.
Right.
And then... sat down and just started watching TV shows in its head.
It keeps talking about its faceplate.
Right. I want my faceplate on.
Right. So people don't look at me and talk to me.
So I have to make eye contact.
And there is a strong element of introversion, but there is also an element of social anxiety there.
But it's consequent to the introversion. And
true.
And I almost think that in a way it seemed to me like a very high functioning autistic personality as well.
That
scene is absolutely one of the. It was because it's one of those scenes that manages to take two emotions. Because you felt sorry for the character, but its reaction was so funny that those two emotions came together without imposing upon each other, and were just accomplished perfectly.
Yes.
In the way that she wrote that scene, and I was absolutely one of the best scenes that I've ever read in any book.
Yes, I would agree with that too. So structure, is that the last one?
Yes, structure.
Concept, prose, structure. Again, you know what? You can't have an excellent book. We're like extolling the virtues. We couldn't possibly be doing that if the structure was awful.
Right, no.
And, I mean, one of the things that I will say about Martha Wells is she has a talent that you don't see anywhere in science fiction.
No.
Very often.
No.
Like I'm also reading something by KSR, by Kim Stanley Robinson, and he's
I like Robinson.
Oh, I love Robinson. I love Robinson because there's nobody else in science fiction hardly who said, not even Andy Weir, who was like, so anyway, they use the word delta V. Nobody uses delta V. He's talking about deceleration.
Right.
You never hear anybody mention that when they're talking about space travel, and he does. And what I'm saying is that the structures of his books are phenomenal, even if they're voluminous.
Right.
This is a really short book. The structure was on point.
And I think that part of that was, you know, Robinson is writing like, he's like the missioner of science fiction.
Right.
He's writing these big epics.
That's okay, yes.
But this is very much, I mean, and that's the thing. She's very much in the realm of Raymond Chandler and other mystery writers, and mysteries tend to be shorter.
Yeah.
And they tend to, you know, to flow more because you basically got one thing going on. And you know, in All Systems Red, it was who's disrupting these surveys and what are they trying to do? And the other one, there were two different things going on at the same time in the second book, but they were both mysteries, and the structure of the books are very much like a noir, hard-boiled mystery novel, and expertly done in that way.
I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb here with a theory, because one of the things I'm seeing happening right now in science fiction is this dime store culture, and I feel like Amazon and Kindle and
right.
is sort of driving that, you know. And it's an upside and there's a downside to it. But there are a lot of people out there who are writing science fiction who really just shouldn't be. And some of them are profiting enormously from it.
But that's where the money is, so that's where they're going.
Yes. And that's the funny thing is that I see people on Facebook, for example, who will show up and say, hey, you know what? What's a really good genre to write for if you want to make money? And it's like,
I just want to tell those people, don't.
Right.
Don't write another word.
What I want to do is hand them a stack of like Omni, Space, and like Popular Mechanic and say, read all of these and come back in 10 years after you don't sell.
Right.
Okay, so the point that I'm making is there's her Martha Wells' release schedule, number one, makes me think that large publishers are getting smart about it.
Right.
Okay.
I love it. This could have they could have crammed all this into one book, called it, given it one name, and just made it look like it was an episodic super novel.
Right.
But I like the fact that instead of that, they're giving us these four novellas.
Yes.
Because for one thing, I don't see it. That's one thing I don't like. I really, when I pick up a book and I see it's over 300 pages, I'm like, you know, this had better be damn good at page 150, or
yeah.
I'm going to be furious. But a book like this, it's really easy.
Yes.
You know that you like it. And then it's over, and you're like, I want the next one. I can't wait for the next one.
It's not dime store pulping. It's like boutique pulping.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So I'm glad to see that the publishers are adapting. I guess what I would say, adapting to technology.
Right.
Or they're adapting to the times. Because I think, and now I will say this also, and you know this already. One of the reasons why, and we talked about this in episode 9, one of the reasons why I'm releasing Hema Crash is because of Martha Wells. Because this first book is only 24,000 words?
The first one is 28.6K.
So 28,000 words. And I was like, you know what? I should do that.
And the second one's only 48, which is still pretty short. It's very short for a science fiction story.
Yeah.
It's in the range for detective stories, but it's pretty short for a science fiction story.
So,
but it was the perfect size for the story.
Yes.
That's the thing. It was amazing how well that was done.
It was. Okay, so we're agreed that she's getting 5 stars across the board.
Yes, absolutely no breaking it.
I actually took the liberty of ordering some of her previous stuff, which some of it's fantasy.
Oh, okay.
And
I saw that she'd written some fantasy, and I was thinking about
Yeah, and it also kind of goes to, so I mean, we're really tough on authors, we're really tough on genre when it comes to science fiction.
Yes,
but you know what? All is forgiven when you can write like that. And I don't even say forgiven. I'm saying, if you're going to do fantasy, or if you're going to take something that's like not rigorous science fiction, then do it like her if you're going to do it.
Right. But what do you think about that? You think this is science fiction?
As I said, I think it's science fiction because what Martha Wells does is she achieves a level of specificity at strategic points.
Right.
Okay. She's like, okay, I'm not going to go into this massive explanation about this wormhole that we come through and we send the probe through.
Right.
I'm not going to go into that. But there's a wormhole.
But she does talk about it in the way that a character who lived in that world would talk about it.
That's
like, what the hell
other
is
thing is she couches it in the voice of the character.
Yeah.
No, it's science fiction, definitely.
Which, being in first-person narrative helps a lot, because you don't expect someone to start expositing about things that they don't know.
Yes. Yes.
I fully consider this to be sci-fi.
I'm a fan of Mark Wells.
Not even space opera. I don't even consider it to be space opera, even though it's got kind of a part of it. You know what is also about this? Is that each one of these books seemed like, the way that they were all set, they were each set on a different planet, it seemed very like the sort of episodes that you would have on the old sci-fi, like Star Trek and stuff like that, where you just go down to one planet and deal with its nonsense for a while, and then it's the next planet, deal with its nonsense. These two would be really good films, where one film was about this, or you know,
like a mini-series.
A mini-series.
Like Childhood 10, like a six-series, Okay, so we're agreed it's five stars. If you win the loot crate, you're going to be in for a treat. It's a fantastic book. But now, we're going to move on to a little bit of Science Roundup, right?
We do. We have three fantastically, and they're all space. This is a space episode.
Space.
Good thing we got space behind us, unless you're watching this on YouTube. Which
we get space, right, yeah. Well, the YouTube space is going to be added in later on.
Yes, we have... Our good old friend Oumuamua is back.
Right,
the
asteroid, Scout.
Or is it a comet?
Yeah, it's an ancient ship.
I'm
going with that story. I'm sticking with it.
Now, the new story is that when they were analyzing its trajectory through the solar system as it swung around the sun, they decided that there was acceleration that could not be explained.
That's the
most recent development.
So it's decelerating, which celestial bodies, unless they're influenced by other...
In space, it's all acceleration in some direction. Like, technically, it's always acceleration. I don't know how to go into physics, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
You know what I'm saying. But it was decelerating. It was going, and it was moving away from, its acceleration was away from the sun in a way that wasn't explained by the solar wind or anything. So they put all the possible things that could be making this happen.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, none of those explained it.
And also because of the gassing.
Well, that's what they said.
Right, so the
that's
gassing,
why they decided that it must have been outgassing, and therefore Oumuamua must be a comet. And the reason that we didn't see a huge halo of outgassing
was that it was facing away from the sun.
The little bit of outgassing there was on the side facing the sun where we couldn't see, which is why the acceleration was away from the sun. But the reason there wasn't a huge amount like you normally see with a comet was because there was this crust of material around the outside of the ice in the middle of the comet. And I'm like, a crust of material that was in the shape of a cigar 10 times longer than it? We talked about how in the world this object could maintain its, while it was tumbling chaotically with this weird shape, the shape of a cigar, why it hadn't broken in half or... And now they're going to now they're trying to say that there is a crust around this entire object, kind of like the shell of a submarine.
Yes,
and it has so much integrity that unlike all the other comets we've ever seen, it held the ice inside as it approached the sun.
Yeah
I don't know.
I'm going
find a new explanation because that one's not that my BS meter is going.
I'm going with deep state actors. are deceiving the public so that they can then board Oumuamua and take the alien technology.
Well, that's the lizard people's, you know.
I'm going with deep state. That's like my default answer for anything that can't be explained. The deep state actors did it.
Well, that's the deep state. That's who it is. It's the lizard people.
And by the time it gets here, I mean, since the Earth is flat anyway, I mean, Oumuamua can just land right on the surface.
Like I said the other day to someone, I said, if the Earth was flat like a table, God would have rage flipped it already. So that's how I know the Earth is not flat.
Okay, so Oumuamua, that's...
it's another one. That's a story that just keeps getting weirder, and the scientist's explanation... I remember we were talking about this, and you were fully on that it was a thing, and I was still kind of skeptical, but every time something else comes out about it... The explanations that the scientists are using, I'm just like, what is this thing made of that it's tumbling and it's this shape, but it's not even breaking apart, and it's acting like no other comet we've ever seen. Occam's razor is starting to come into my
availability
on that one. I still don't know what it is, but there's something weirder about this than
the simple explanation. It's cigar shaped. It's probably something.
It's one of the submarines that vanished during World War II.
It's just a space sub. It's like a
oh, that's interesting. Well, that's, I mean,
but
yeah,
intelligent beings.
Isn't that what a spaceship would be? Is it technically a submarine?
Yes.
Space,
yes. It's like a submarine that somehow shed its.
I have a feeling.
It's Albert from it's Alcubierre floating drive.
Oh, yes.
And that's what it's called.
Well, you know what? They're
if you get close enough to it and it's expending excited protons, then we know it's like a, it had a warp drive at some point.
Right.
Yeah. I don't.
Well, yeah, they also just found out that interstellar space is filled with grease. The carbon compounds are
really
these, apophatic, but it's the greasy type of carbon compounds, and they're worried that interstellar craft are going to get coated with it. So maybe like it's got that stuff that was around it that they were talking about.
Yeah,
that maybe that was
the
gook that had gotten stuck on the outside of the interstellar ship. But I have a feeling we're not. This won't be the last time that Oumuamua appears in our science facts.
I think it's going to vanish suddenly, and like I said, deep state actors are going to like haul it in, and we'll never see it again. That's my theory. Okay, so
do what with like Area 51?
Yes, I would. If I had my way, if I were a deep state actor, by the way, I could be. It would be Area 52, like Broom Lake Part 2.
Why don't you just go double down and do Area 102?
Where
51 plus 51.
Okay.
We can do 50. We can do.
That's 50, how simple our math is.
52 pickup. Just flip all the aliens into the air and someone else can clean it.
So, what's our second round?
This is going completely off the rails.
Scientists
were talking about, because they've been looking for exoplanets where life could be possible. We found a lot of planets that were in the Goldilocks zone where it wasn't too cold and it wasn't too hot, but they were gas giants. And then somebody, I guess, decided, well, gas giants have moons, don't they? Maybe the moons could be someplace. So now there's a whole effort going on to see if any of these gas giants that are in the Goldilocks zone of stars, if they might have moons that themselves would be capable of hosting life. That's interesting, I think.
That is interesting.
You know, you're going to end up with your Endors and your Yavins and your...
You mean like jungle planets where we train our...
Just planets that are moons of other planets.
Yes.
Which is... Titan. We have Titan, and as a matter of fact, we're getting ready to talk about the next thing includes one of these, which is Enceladus, but also Mars.
Yes.
Both of them are now throwing organic molecules at our sensors.
Yes.
And scientists are all a giggle.
Well, they are saying, admittedly, they're being a little more cautious this time around. They are saying that even though this organic material is not necessarily a sign of life, they're saying that A, it's a sign that Mars could support life,
right?
Eventually, in other words, there are resources there that we can then use to support life. But also, they're saying that it's evidence or an indication that maybe life once existed.
Right. So it's a life.
But to be clear, not human life.
Right. Right.
Like
the probability of life there, future, past, or present, went up.
Yeah. Exactly.
I like that. And they found basically the same thing, spewing out of the icy surface of Enceladus, where these geysers from the inner ocean of this moon here, they detected organic material in it, and they're basically saying the same thing that they're saying about Mars, which is life either was here or it is there or it would more easily be there because of these organic molecules.
So, and big ups to Curiosity.
No kidding. Indestructible little creature.
They could just engineer my car.
Oh, I know. If they could engineer my robot body that they're going to download my consciousness into.
Along with all of Netflix.
Yeah, along so that I can watch on my feed and not have to and put my faceplate up.
Yes. Okay. So that's our wrap. So are we going to touch upon the Expanse?
Yeah,
we've got a few minutes. We've got like 5 or 10 minutes left.
The Expanse season finale. Let's.
You know what? Sci-fi. Just kill yourself.
Yeah, okay. This is one of those things. It's like when your girlfriend or your boyfriend breaks up with you, and the next time you see them, they look buff or beautiful. You know what I mean? You're like, what? Sci-fi.
Right.
The people at sci-fi should just be weeping in their offices right now because the two episode finale of The Expanse season 3 was together were better than most of the films that are in theaters.
Yes,
it was just. It was remarkable, remarkable end to a remarkable season. And I mean, I can't imagine that the folks over at Amazon Prime who are about to pick this up.
Like, look at you.
Oh, my God.
How do you work at sci-fi and not get advanced look at the entire season and say, you know, we're going to keep this?
Right.
First of all, how do you change your name from S-C-I-F-I to S-Y-F-Y?
To Sifi.
And then, like,
what you are now.
Your whole and then literally purge all the deviant science fiction out of your programming.
There's no science fiction there anymore.
Not,
thing.
Winona Earp is not science fiction. Sorry, it's just not. I mean, I'm sure it's a great
could
show.
Could be good, but it's
I
not,
mean, you no. know. Anyway, so, yeah, that breakup was ugly. I'm glad that Amazon picked it up.
But The Expanse is so much better off. I mean, for one thing, you can do more on Amazon than you can do on,
true.
On sci-fi. Or, I mean, on CP.
So tell us about the last one.
Well, I mean, there
I haven't had a chance
conflict,
to watch it yet, but I'm okay with spoilers.
This conflict inside the, through the ring, in this sort of middle space that's not anywhere, that the aliens who built the proto-molecule
Abaddon's Gate
had created. Yeah. And so the conflict between the Earthers and the Martians and the Belters just continues to escalate until the point where one of the they decided to perform an experiment on the station, which is what they're calling this big blue sphere of what's essentially the same sort of material as the proto molecule.
Yeah.
And what they're going to do is they're going to explode a nuke. Here's a good idea. Let's explode a nuke near the station.
Right.
And so they do this, and of course, immediately the station contains the explosion. And then it starts doing this magnetic pulsing. It gets faster and faster and larger,
yeah.
And they're trying to figure out what's going on. And I don't know if you've seen the third to the last episode where Holden has that huge vision
yeah.
of everything that's going. And early in the penultimate episode, Holden tells someone that the creatures, the beings who created the station, created the ring, the protomolecule. Well, something was destroying them, and
right.
they were slow. They were themselves deciding to just burn
right.
system after system from the station through rings of their own systems,
right.
as if they were trying to cauterize a wound.
Right.
And he didn't understand why. He just knows that there was something going wrong in their civilization, and they were trying to stop it in the most violent way possible. And so that's when they figure out that what the station is doing is it's ramping up a weapon like a railgun to shoot through the ring and just destroy the entire solar system. So every human being that exists is in peril at that point. And I'm not going to reveal how they work around that. But I will tell you this. Miller is still there. And he is funnier than ever. At the end, you figure out that there are certain ways that he's been playing Miller all along.
Interesting.
And sort of carrying out the aliens. Because he's now the aliens detective. He's now working for them, trying to figure out stuff for them. And you don't realize until the very end of it what it is that they're trying to figure out. And I really like the fact that they're able to bring Miller back, because I like that character.
Definitely read the books, too. I mean, I just ordered the books.
Right. They've gotten up to the point where I haven't read past. So I may
right.
have to, before the next season comes out, pick up a
yeah. principle. It is the best science fiction on television right now.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, absolutely.
If you're not watching it, you're a science fiction fan.
It's not only that, but it's one of the best dramas on television, regardless of genre.
I agree with that. And the thing is that I can't stop being angry at sci-fi, because it's not the first time they've done this. It's like they have a history of, you know, look, if you're going to work at a place called sci-fi, and actually that's part of your branding and your marketing, maybe you learn something about sci-fi. Like,
there's a difference between sci-fi and fantasy. And if you wanted to call yourself something that said we're going to put on sci-fi and fantasy, well, that's fine, too.
That's fine, too. Completely fine.
But don't call yourself sci-fi, even if you misspell it.
And then purge your whole lineup.
And then purge
sci-fi.
Your... Yeah.
Yes.
That's... What?
Yeah.
That would be like... I mean, how ridiculous would this be? Imagine if MTV didn't show music anymore.
Right.
That's how ridiculous that would be.
Even if you're going to keep The Expanse... even if The Expanse is a dog... Keep it just so you can still call yourself sci-fi.
But it's not.
It's not. It's totally your.
But it's not.
It's your American Kennel Club, like Westminster Dog Show. Like
it's fantastic. It is one of the best dramas. I mean, like I'm talking about, you know, I'm having watched shows of such varied dramas as Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones and stuff that's all over the place.
Yeah.
But The Expanse, even if you don't particularly like sci-fi, you're going to like the show because you're going to like the characters and the way they interact with each other.
Yes. Agreed. Okay. Well, I would definitely recommend you check that out. Check out Amazon next season. Check out the expansion on Amazon.
Right.
Briefly, as we do at the end of every episode, all this right here, space backdrops, omni-level 70s cheesy space backdrops, lighting,
T-shirts that I change every episode.
Loot crates, these things do not support, do not buy themselves. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you going to Patreon, Fresh Pulp, Patreon page, going to Buy Me a Coffee, which is an ad hoc version of Patreon, so you don't need to be,
you don't have to be a patron.
Yeah, patron. Doing that helps us pay for things like loot crates, upgrade our operation. But the most important way you can support us, like, share, comment. If you do those things, it's funny, whenever I go into this little spiel, someone always appears. Do that. Like, share, comment. That's the best way you can support us because it'll invariably come across someone else's desk who will then donate or whatever. So, but for the time being, thank you for tuning in for this little 2 hours, back to back. We will be back next month. And thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Join us again.
We'll do exactly the same.
We'll do the exact same.
Thank you for tuning in.